Welcome to the Embodiment Conference. My name is. Oh, that is just not going to work at all. Oh, never accept a dare from Mark Walsh. Welcome to the Embodiment Conference. My name is Leslie Kaminoff, and you may know me as the co-author of the international bestseller, Yoga Anatomy. But I'm also the co-founder of yogaanatomy.net. Now, that's a platform we built 11 years ago where we offer online courses and in-depth anatomy modules that support teachers, teacher trainings, and students all over the world. So that's why we are thrilled to be sponsoring all the incredible sessions here on the Yoga Channel, including my own. And if you feel a connection with the way I teach, I have some great news for you. We are extending scholarships to all members of the Embodiment Conference. And you can find that scholarship info and links to yogaanatomy.net in the description for this presentation and in the show notes. In the meantime, enjoy your body, enjoy your breath, and enjoy your conference. And I'll see you online.
I love that video. So it is my pleasure to introduce Layla Stewart to you all. She is a massage therapist and a yoga therapist, an international teacher, an online educator, and an author with over 40 years of experience teaching and practicing yoga. Her passion is sharing experiential anatomy, repatterning, and embodiment of the deeper teachings of yoga as the pathway to self-healing. She developed an innovative 300-hour teacher training called the Anatomy of Yoga Therapy, which she's taught for 15 years. Layla specializes in transforming intellectual information into embodied awareness and life-changing experience. We are so blessed to have you with us today, Layla, and I will hand it over to you.
Thank you very much, Hannah. And I guess you must be talking a lot because your voice is starting to sound like you're talking a lot. So I am just so grateful to be here and grateful that Mark and his team of incredible people have taken on the task, this monumental task of, I can't believe how many presenters there are and how many people have signed up for it. It's truly magnificent. And I feel very honored to be a part of all of this. And the topic is embodiment, and that's something that's very near and dear to my heart. And I would like to tell you how I came to that, as a start. So what I'd like to do is talk for a while, and I've got just a couple of slides. I know it gets kind of boring when there's slides all the time. And then I want to really go into working with the pelvis as an example of a part of the body that we can use to access our wholeness, our bigness, our deeper self. So I am a massage therapist. I don't work clinically anymore, and I don't teach my course anymore because I'm too busy traveling and writing and teaching. But what I found as a massage therapist very quickly is that the body seems to have a very different personality than the person who's in the body. And also I found somewhat later that it appeared that different parts of the body actually had different personalities as well. And as a massage therapist, people might come in and say, "Oh, I have a really sore shoulder. I really need some deep work." And when I put my hands on that person, on their shoulders would be saying, "No, no, 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 please, no, don't dig into me. All I want is some acknowledgement." And you know what? I'm just carrying way too much stuff right now. And so I found that I could talk to the different parts of the body, and I would be the translator to the person in the body. And working over time, what would happen is that person would then start to inhabit more parts of their body and be able to tune into those parts in a very different way. So most of us take our bodies for granted. And until something happens, we're rolling merrily along, and then something happens like, whoa, wow, how did that happen? And then we're really confronted with, wow, I have knees. But we're either used to ignoring our knees or working, dealing with them, communicating with them in a very particular way. So I started to teach experiential anatomy. So I love anatomy. I loved studying anatomy. And in the 2 years of massage college that I took, I learned all the, you know, the names and the locations and the, you know, everything about the blood vessels and the nerves and the bones. And, you know, we were stuffed with facts. But the facts, what I became aware of is the facts didn't really mean anything, and they didn't really take me anywhere. What took me somewhere was being able to have a hands-on experience of those parts. And that for the people whose bodies I was working with, if they actually got a felt sense of a part of their body, then they would inhabit that part in a very different way. And in fact, sort of ignite the intelligence of that part of their body. So I started out teaching a series of workshops called The Body Project. And then I started to teach my yoga therapy course, which I called The Anatomy of Yoga Therapy. So what I really understood, and what people started to understand, is that every part has a wisdom. In fact, every cell has a wisdom, has an intelligence, and we can actually tap into that. And the best way that I've found to do that is experiential anatomy. And that what I found after teaching workshops and teaching my training and working with my own self is that awareness is awareness is awareness. And when we start with the body, that awareness sort of ripples outward, and we start to have a better awareness of our emotions, of our mind, of our mood, of our habits of perception, our habits of movement. And so that's what this session is all about. So to wake up the intelligence of the body. And well, why do we want to do that? We want to do that so that we can have access to the wholeness that connects all of those parts. So in the description of this workshop, I tied experiential anatomy into resilience. And I really like the work of Linda Graham. She wrote a book. Well, she's written a couple of books. The first book that she wrote is called Bouncing Back. And I don't know, Hannah, you may want to put that in the chat. Linda Graham. And her second book is called Resilience. And it's resilience specifically oriented to trauma. And one of the things, well, what she says is that resilience, we build resilience by patterning mindfulness and self-compassion self-compassion and really self-awareness and empathy. And so when we put those together, that's mindful empathy. And what I found over the years of teaching people experiential anatomy is that they become very tender with themselves. And that really what I was teaching in experiential anatomy was building resilience, was these two things of mindfulness and self-empathy. And what Linda Graham says about how we get there to mindful compassion, mindful empathy, is through breath, through mindful movement, and through loving touch. Yeah. And so in experiential anatomy, we work with all of those things. So even though resilience wasn't really I wasn't aware of resilience as the thing that it has become, when I started teaching this 30 years ago, I realized as the new information comes in that, wow, that's what experiential anatomy does. And so I'll talk a little bit, I've got a slideshow, and I'll talk a little bit about experiential anatomy, what it is and how we get there. Okay, I think. Okay, I'm not sure what I just did.
Layla, if you go back, hit the back button.
Go back. Let's see. I'm going to stop screen sharing, and then I'm going to go back. Okay. Oh dear, I actually took my screen share off, it looks like. I'm sorry, people. Let's see. Okay, there it is. All right, there it is. Okay. So we already know this is called experiential anatomy as therapy. And what I have found over the years is that if you can feel something, then you can heal it. If it's not in your consciousness, then it's really difficult to say hello to it, to interact with it, to form a relationship with it. And so that's become kind of a catchphrase for me. If you can feel it, you can heal it. So what is experiential anatomy? So I talked about how I learned all the intellectual information in my massage therapy training. And intellectual information is processed in a certain part of the brain. And as you all know, it's really easy to forget information. But when we take that dry anatomical information into the body, then it goes through a different pathway to the brain. And it creates a somatic memory, a body memory. And those body memories, we don't lose them so quickly. Yeah. So when we work with our body, the tendency is for those sensations to stay longer. So we have this whole world inside of us. And it's helpful to know what we look like. And it's helpful to know even sometimes the names of structures, but the real gold is getting a felt sense of it. And that's really how we get to know ourselves, in a much deeper way. We have a direct experience of ourself, not just of our body, but we can gain an awareness of our emotions, our mind, and all of that. So when we go in somatically, it makes it very real for the body. And people get very curious. It's like, oh, I'm so interesting, aren't I? And and by making it real for the body, then it makes it easier for people to reclaim disowned parts of themselves. And every part of the body can become a touchstone for embodiment, for sort of coming in to yourself. So different people will connect with different parts in various times and in various ways, but every part of us can be a way in. So when we learn something, so for example, today we're going to work with the pelvic circle, and we learn it intellectually, then we do some stuff, we feel it in our body, and then we can take it into our everyday life. We can take it into our yoga practice. We can take it into how we're moving our body when we're hiking or when we're reaching for something. So that's the value of experiential anatomy. It allows us to integrate useful information in a way that makes our life easier and better. So interoception, which is really what experiential anatomy is getting so much research being done on it these days. And I'm just so excited about it. And because a lot of the research is confirming some of the things that have really shown up for me. And not just, I have to say here that everything that I teach, I have learned from my students. So from the feedback of the students, and all of what I'm saying now is I can only say it because my students have given me this feedback. So I'm very grateful for that. So what is interoception? It's our ability to sense into our inner processes. So in a very gross sense, of course, it's hunger and I need to poop and I'm thirsty and all of that. But it's also because the interoceptive nerve endings are the most abundant nerve endings in the body, we know that interoception is very important. And a lot of it is underneath our consciousness. We don't need to know that our blood vessels need to dilate when we're hot. But what it means is that it's important, that interoception is really important. And what we know from the research now is that the pathway for interoception goes, among other structures, to the insula in the brain. And the insula also has to do with processing emotions. Processing emotions, we know we're feeling an emotion because of some sensations that we experience. And I'm just checking the time because I want to make sure that we have lots of practice time. And also the research has shown that interoception, the ability to intercept, is also tied with our sense of self. So isn't that interesting? When we articulate our self, our parts, then we get to know who we are. And I think that's really amazing. And we utilize that in using yoga or experiential anatomy as therapy. And what do I want to say about that? Yes, I know. When we use interoception with respect to particular body parts or joints or organs or bones or whatever, then it gives us a sense of isness, that we have an arm, that we can tune into the arm, and that we can tune into differences in that arm, differences in sensations. And when the more we visit particular parts, the more those parts are in our mental landscape, our neural landscape. So we can increase what Norman Doidge calls the neural real estate for particular parts. And that takes practice. So it's increasing our body map. And as we're working with interoception, it also helps us to become aware of our own habits. So our habits of breath, our habits of alignment, of standing, of moving, of perception, of response, because each one of those creates sensations. Yeah. So we can take all of that into therapy. Yeah. We can do an inquiry that will repattern, that will reveal those habits, and then we can do little practices to repattern those habits, and then we can feel the difference in our daily life, and then we can decide, what do I want to do? Do I want to be doing the old way? Because the old way brings me these particular consequences, or do I want to practice this new way so that that becomes more of my reality? So we can change our perspective, we can change our experience, and also therapeutically it builds resources. So we can build, we know from the research that interoception builds the ability to self-regulate. It builds the ability to support oneself. So it's kind of like family therapy. So often in family systems therapy, one person is taken away and the therapist works with that person, and then that person comes back in and the whole dynamic changes. And it's exactly like that with experiential anatomy. So even though it's not great to be focusing on the part all the time, if we always look at the part in the context of the whole, and we zoom into the part, and then we zoom out to the body, and then we can zoom out to the community, we can zoom out to the world, but we now have a touchstone or an anchor in our own body. So no matter how much we go out there in the world, we have a touchstone so we can stay in. So that's one of the most valuable parts of all of this. It's a very practical thing. So I have found that the physical body is, for most people, the easiest entry point for working with in yoga we call it the koshas, or with the other aspects of ourself. In the medical world, it's the biopsychosocial model. So when we start with the body and we build that awareness, then we can start expanding that awareness to other parts. And then once we have a sense of that, we can touch into our own wholeness. There's a paradox there, that we work with the part, but in the end we get the whole. Okay, so we always work with the part in the context of the whole. And of course, this is an embodiment conference, and I'm presenting experiential anatomy because in my experience, it's one of the best ways I know to become more embodied. And we do that by increasing our awareness of ourself. Through inquiry, we get self-knowledge, and we can touch into our own self-compassion. And this is the way we transform. This is how yoga becomes a transformative process. I have a student, and she very tragically witnessed the suicide of her son. Unfathomable experience. And when she came to class, this was maybe 6 months on, she was shattered. She was just shattered. But she heard that yoga was good for grief. So she came to class. And she's actually still a student, but after about a year, she said, you know, every time we cover a different part of the body, I feel like I get more of myself back. And that's really what interoception can do. And when it's taken into experiential anatomy in a very precise way, then that's what it does. You get yourself, you get more of yourself. Okay, and then lastly, safety. So when we are in our body, when we have looked at a joint and we can see, oh yeah, this is how this particular joint is supposed to work, then it's much easier to respect the limitations of our own structure to be able to tune into when I move, oh, I'm starting to get into the place where it's the end range of the joint and I should stop. Then that creates a feeling of safety. And I have another student, I'll just tell you one more story. I have another student who had a history of childhood sexual abuse. And what she said after a few years is that she realized that that experiential anatomy had helped her because she could rely on her structure. Her femur was always going to be her femur. She could always feel her digestive system and it was always going to be there. It wasn't going to betray her. And so this sense of more solidity in self, in itself, can build a sense of safety. And we know from all the trauma work that when we feel safe in ourselves, then we can, well, number one, we're healthier people because those same pathways are the pathways for health, but also that we can connect both with ourselves and with others. So that is the slideshow. Well, actually one more, just a little advertising. That's my book that I wrote with Donna Fari on the psoas. And I think that Hannah will be putting all of the links for that in the, and all the every other stuff in the chat. Okay, all right, so now the pelvis. So I am going to go right into a little bit of anatomy and I have my skeleton here. So this is Joe. And what I want to say about the skeleton about the pelvis before I jump into the anatomy is that it is the center. It's like the hub of the wheel. So the legs, the spine, the arms all actually emanate from the pelvis. It's our physical center. So it's our place of stability, of strength, of grounding. And when we can tap into this, then we can actually tap into that sense of grounding. So I'm just going to move Joe over a little bit more. Okay. So I could say so much about this beautiful pelvis, but having a look at it first, just getting a sense of the amazing shape of it. There's no straight lines. Maybe I'll just move it so you can see it better. There's no straight lines, it's all curves. And what I want to focus on today is the circle of the pelvis. So we've got these arches, this posterior arch, which is the base of the sacrum and going on to the ilia. And then we've got the anterior arch here, the pubic bone, where it joins the ilia. So these are the pelvis is three paired bones. It's the ilia, two paired ilia, like big elephant ears, and the pubic bone in front. And the pubic bone has a part that dives back toward the back. And then in the back, we've got the sitting bones. And the sitting bone, the ischium, also has a part that dives forward, and they meet and they form the bone that, if you've ever fallen off a bike seat onto a boy's bike, you know it's there, you know those bones are there. So what I want to really look at today is first we're just learning a little bit about it. So that's always the first step. What does it look like? What are the shape of things? So here we've got this circle, and the circle is actually a symbol of wholeness. And so here we have this symbol of wholeness right in our pelvis. We've also got holes here that can provide lightness. And we've got this curvedness, so we can think of energy swirling around in there, yeah? So the second step in experiential anatomy is feeling it. So I would like you to feel your pelvis a little bit. So whether you're sitting in a chair or on the floor, if you could first of all, just and remember that building resilience, one of the steps is loving touch. So before you even touch yourself, what I would suggest or invite you to do is just hold your hands out and bring a sense of loving kindness and compassion into your hands. How am I going to touch myself? And you can even connect your hands to your heart if it's easier for you to generate a sense of self-compassion and loving kindness from your heart and get a sense of streaming that energy from your heart into your hands. And then take your hands and put them on your pelvic crest here. And there's a topography or a geography. So using the soft pads of your fingertips in a very gentle way, just start at one place and first maybe go forward and see, oh, there's a bit of an inside, and oh, there's a bit of an outside, and trace the whole crest from the front and then all the way to the back where it joins the sacrum. And as you're doing that, getting a sense of, oh, isn't that interesting? That's how that feels. Oh, okay. And then if you could slide, take your nice gentle fingers and slide them down your belly until you reach your pubic bone. And in a very gentle way, just palpate your pubic bone a little bit. There's a joint in the middle, and you might feel a little bump there. And again, there's quite a lot of topography, so you can go underneath a bit or on top a bit and just get a sense for pubic bone. And then go to the back. You could lift your bum up a little bit from the chair, from the floor, and palpate a little bit of the ischium first on one side. And it's a very big bone here. So you can really use your loving touch to feel, oh, wow, I didn't realize it was that big. And if you want, you can just palpate a little bit underneath and then go to the other side. Good. Okay. And then take your hand onto your sacrum in the back, because that's what joins the two halves of the pelvis. And just get a sense for the boniness of it, for the tissue on top of it, the little tip at the bottom. And then take your hands away and close your eyes and just get a sense for, so that's what my pelvis feels like. And you may or may not have a sense of it, and if you don't, that's okay. And then just take your hands on either side to get a sense of the width of your pelvis. And then take your hands on top of those pelvic crests and feel your sitting bones and get a sense of the height. And then if you take one hand onto the pubic bone in front and one hand on the sacrum in back to get a sense of the depth of it. And then just get a sense of taking your mind into the insides, full of organs and fascia, and there's some muscle there, and blood vessels and nerves. We have it, we're three-dimensional. We have depth, we have volume. So we're going to work a little bit now with this circle here. And I just want to put this ball in here. So this is our energetic center. Yeah, this is our hara in our pelvic center. And one day when I was preparing for class, I use a lot of different soft balls. And I was working with the pelvis and I thought, oh, look at that. Oh, wow, that fits right in there. And isn't that a wonderful visual for the hara? So you can get a sense for that. And I'm just going to put Joe away. Okay, so let's get a sense for this. We'll start out just with, I call this the hara sphere, yeah? Because I like to remind people that it's a sphere. So if you can imagine that this ball is actually deep in your pelvis, wedged into the sides, the front, the sacrum is on one end, the pubic bone on other end, and then the ilia snugging on either side. And I'd like to do just a little meditation with that so that you can visualize it. So please close your eyes if that's comfortable, otherwise just gaze down. And take your awareness into that pelvic circle, into that hara sphere. And if you could put your left hand on your lap, just at the level of that hara sphere, and take your right hand and put it on top. So this is the Dhyani Mudra. And touch the thumbs together. So the circle is the symbol of wholeness. And placing that at the level of your pelvis. And imagine that you could breathe from that sphere. And that as you inhale, that sphere expands a little bit, forward into the pubic bone, backward into the inner surface of the sacrum on either side of the ilia. And that as you exhale, that ball condenses back on itself towards its center. So do that for a few breaths. And get a sense that you carry your wholeness with you. And there's a reminder of that in the circle of your pelvis, the pelvic outlet, it's called. And that there is an energetic center in there, and it kind of looks like a bright yellow ball. And then now change it up a little bit. And instead of expanding on the inhalation, as you inhale, think of condensing the ball. And as you exhale, the ball just relaxes back to its size. And notice if that feels any different when you inhale and condense. And whichever one you liked better, go back to that for these last few breaths. And then open your eyes if they're closed. And if you want to say something in the chat about which one you liked and why, then please do that. So when you expand on the inhalation, then that's dispersing energy. Yeah. When you inhale and condense, then that's tonifying. So in Chinese medicine, that's tonifying. So when you need to come back into yourself a little more, that's the one to use. When you need to disperse energy a little bit, then the first one is that one to use. Okay, so I like the first one. I felt like expanding the pelvic floor in the inhale. Yeah. 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 It felt natural to expand. Yeah. Protecting my energy. Yeah. Good. All right. So the Hara breath is a very useful breath. And I encourage you to keep playing with that, to take this away with you. And the second thing I'd like you to play with as a takeaway is, can we use that circle to move? Yeah. Can we, when we initiate movement from that place, is it different? Okay. Good. Yeah. Okay. Great. Okay. So what I would like to do is, we've got generally Now I'm watching all of the chat. There's such interesting feedback. So now there's three basic movements of the pelvis, and of course combinations of all of those. So we can flex and extend. And if we can visualize the movement happening from the ball, then I think that you might find that it feels a little different. Then we've got a side bend. Yeah, and then we've got a twist. So if you're sitting on the floor or on the chair, either will work. I'm going to continue sitting in my chair, and I'm going to come down a little bit so you can see me. There you go. And so we're just going to play briefly with these movements. So if you now put your mind back in that pelvic circle and in the higher sphere, if that makes sense to you, and get a sense of spinning the ball forward, and that takes your whole spine forward, and then spinning the ball backward, and that takes you into a little bit of extension. And you might even want to keep that Dhyani mudra there as a representation of the sphere. Yeah. So deep, deep initiation. And then a side bend. Rolling sideways. And just stop there for a moment. And if I just said to you, flex and extend your pelvis, so tip your pelvis forward, tip your pelvis backward, where would you move from? Just notice that. And if I said, do a side bend, where would you move from? And then go back to initiating side bend from deep within that pelvic circle, and notice if it's any different. Good. And then twist. Rolling the ball forward and rolling the ball backward. Deep, deep inside the pelvis. Good. All right. And letting that go. So let's stand up for a few moments and take that into standing, because it's always important that we can integrate what we learned into practice. Okay, so in standing, getting a sense now of how am I standing? And what is the orientation of my hara, of my energy center, of my wholeness habitually? Is it oriented downward? Is it oriented upward? Or are you shining your wholeness into the world? What's your habit? How do you carry? How do you express your wholeness? How do you live from your wholeness? And then getting that sense again, and again, you can use the ball image or the mudra. From deep inside, initiate just a little forward bend. And from deep inside, initiate just a little back bend. Do that a few times. And I'll give you just a minute to play with that. So you don't have to do the planar movements. You can be circling, you can figure eight, you can move a little bit, you can move into a posture, whatever you want to do. Just take a minute or two and play with that. And it's always useful to let that go for a moment and move from your normal, move in your normal way. And just so that your interoceptive system gets the difference. What I mean by shining your wholeness into the world is when there's so many different ways that the pelvis can be misaligned, but when it's in right relationship with everything else, then you carry your wholeness, and it's probably more likely that you will live more from your wholeness. That's what I mean. Okay, so letting that, I know it's a very short time, but you can take this into your own practice. If you could just stand for a moment and feel, get a sense of your pelvis, get a sense of your feet now. So how has working in that way with your pelvis translated into how you're standing? And then come on back to sitting. And I'm not sure if we have time for one question, maybe, Hannah?
Yeah, you have time for one quick question. We do have one in the Q&A now. The question is the pelvis your body's center?
Your center of gravity is in the pelvis. So for most people, it's somewhere around S2, the second sacral segment. It's different for men and women, and different for, you know, pregnant women, and different for everyone, but it's somewhere around there. So what that means is that what's above and below, and what's in front and behind, and what's side to side tends to be centered. Yeah. So when you focus on the Hara sphere image and move from there, then you are definitely moving more from your center. Yeah.
And then we do have another question in the Q&A. Do you offer online courses?
I do. I've got one with Yoga U Online, a foot one. And oh good, somebody has stopped some intense pain. And I'm going to start teaching through Yoga Campus in the UK. So my first course with them is going to be teaching breathing to non-breathers. And we'll also do teaching movement to non-movers. And I'll be doing a number of courses with them. And so you can get on their mailing list. And they're in the UK, but we're doing them at a time when people in North America can do them as well. So thank you for asking. So thank you very much for showing up to this and for your willingness to explore your pelvis. Thank you for liking my book. That's 15 years of experiential anatomy of the psoas. Yeah. So please take your wholeness into the world and live from it.
Thank you so much, Leila. That was beautiful. And I can tell from the chat that the audience is getting so much out of this experience. So continue to write in the chat, let Leila know how you've experienced this session. We will be taking an hour break. During that time, please do take care of yourselves. Do what you need, maybe stepping away from the screen, or if you do feel like some connection would be good for you, please pop into the Embodiment Conference yoga page and continue this conversation with your fellow embodiment people. We have put some chat links in the chat of how you can connect with Layla and her work, as well as a special offer from Layla. You're getting a lot of praise in there, so you might have to scroll back up to find those links. When we come back from our hour break, we will have our next speaker is Layla Sadeghi, and she'll be offering a session called Rituals to Embody True Self-Worth. So check out those links in the chat so you can connect with Layla, connect with one another. And if you'd like to own this session and the rest of the conference, or maybe just one track, there's a link in there for you to be able to upgrade your package. And it's a really nice way to be able to digest all of this amazing information on your own time and revisit sessions that really call to you. And it also helps make this content free for everyone else. So thank you for that. And I'd like to turn it back to you, Layla, for one final word. Can you please share with us your top tip to be more embodied?
My top tip would be stay with your wholeness as you move in the world.
Beautifully said. Thank you so much, Layla. Thank you for everyone who's joined us. And we will see you at the next session.
Thank you, Hannah.
Thank you.
And thank you for people who showed up to be real people that I could look at.